Thank you for that. And you hear that music Tuesdays at 9:40 a.m. out here on the West Coast. You know, it's time for CellSportTalk.com. Rick Tittle back with you coast to coast and around the world on American Forces Network. Karen Lyle, as usual, co-hosts this segment with me. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I just came back from London to San Francisco yesterday. So here we are with a guest that I brought on the show from the Golden Hind.
Yes, we're going to have Gary Lockley, ship's manager of Golden Hind Sailing Ship in London. Gary, welcome to the show. The Golden Hind is something that we know very well out here in San Francisco because we were always told that during the circumnavigation Sir Francis Drake actually stopped just north of San Francisco. In fact, it's still called Drake's Bay, and he left this engraved plaque that was found underwater. And then some years ago, they said, oh, that was all a farce. So what did the Golden Hind come here or not, Gary?
Good morning. Unfortunately, it is still a point of contention today. To this day, historians still arguing that the possibility is he landed further north, more towards Oregon. But the ship I work on, the ship I sort of facilitate, is was inspired and created because of two homegrown San Francisco entrepreneurs, as it were, around, I think, 1968, they came together and said, hey, it's the 400th anniversary of Drake and the ship arriving here. Let's make a new one. And so they did. So, and unfortunately, I can't give you a definite answer on that. But what I can say is the ship that I work on is a San Franciscan ship.
I didn't even know that, Gary, when we talked. So I actually met you because of the Worshipful Company of Boyers, who was donating a longbow that they made for your ship's museum to be able to show people how war was conducted with longbows. Tell us a little bit about that ceremony that we participated in just a few days ago.
Well, it's you know, there's so much history in and around the voyage, the ship, and we're very lucky on our little island across the pond there that you can throw something, it lands on the floor, and there's, you know, 10 pages worth of history to talk about it. But essentially, our ship, we're trying to it now sits in dry dock. It remains permanently docked. The rules and regulations, as it were, have changed quite dramatically since it sailed around the world from 1973 until early 2000s, I think 2001. And what we've been trying to do is basically reach out to these historical guilds. So, you know, you have the Fletchers who make the arrows, the Bowyers who make the bow. You know, you've got the Turners that turn the wood, the barber surgeons, ironmongers, you name it. Basically trying to reach out to those guilds and say, you know, there's an opportunity here. We tell your story. Because we know for a fact there were archers on board the Golden Hind in Drake's day, because it was, there was a law that, you know, everybody within the borders of the realm must learn and train on the longbow. So after you go to church on a Sunday, you'd be practicing with this longbow for a couple of hours because you could form militia. They'd won many battles forming militia. Everybody always says the Battle of Agincourt is the most famous one, but essentially Henry VIII says, you know, make sure everyone can learn and use this. So we know it didn't matter if you were on a ship and you're hiring volunteers, it doesn't matter if they've never sailed before, because at least they can operate this longbow. But there would have been soldiers on board anyway, you know, they know they're going into battle. So we stick these archers up in the baskets around the masts, and on our ship that we call them fighting tops, because crow's nests aren't quite around yet. So unfortunately, the lookouts go at the very top of the mast on these tiny little cross trees, these like hashtag looking pieces of wood, and they hang on for dear life as the ship rocks and sways. But underneath, we've got this accompaniment of archers that are going to literally loose arrows down on enemy ships so the rest of us can jump on board. So that was the impetus for reaching out to the Bowyers, and, you know, thankfully they said, hey, yeah, listen, we'll get a longbow for you so you can get it up on display and talk a little bit more about it. So it's going to be great going down the line, because we can obviously get visitors and, you know, school tours to have a little play with the thing and hold the longbow and talk a little bit more about its purpose and its use, which is just great. It's always nice when people can handle things.
As soon as you said Agincourt, I started doing St. Crispin's Day speech, Henry V, in my head. I got to get it out of my head now. That gentleman in England, now abed, shall think themselves accursed. Oh, so great. About Drake, though, I mean, we know that he fought against the Armada, but there were also rumors that maybe, dare I even suggest, that the Virgin Queen was maybe not a virgin and maybe Drake was one of her lovers. What are your thoughts?
Well, there's, we know for a fact Elizabeth was closer with the Earl of Essex. That was her unofficial official lover, as it were. But the rumors around Drake and Elizabeth are because they she has nicknames for people, and essentially people become her favorites and she gives them a nickname, and Drake was her little pirate. And when Drake first returns from this circumnavigation, so I mean, in the Queen's mind, her and her court have sponsored around 5 ships, you know, they've given them a bunch of money, around 170 crew across the fleet, across the 5 ships. They go off, and the story they tell everyone is, you know, tell your crew you're going off on a diplomatic mission to Egypt, to Alexandria rather. And what they actually do is go off and conduct a load of acts of piracy, with the Queen's blessing, of course. And I think the phrase she uses is relieve the Spanish of their newfound wealth, especially in the Southern Americas. And he does just that. But I mean, it's 3 years later when he comes back. So in her mind, they're gone. You know, they're forgotten. Voyage, you know, mission lost, all of the ships lost. But when he does return, she's very happy and they disappear for 6 hours. So this is where the sort of rumors and speculation come from. What do they do during that time? But it's almost certain that herself and Drake would have sat down at some point and said, this is my private stash. Here's your bonus. Now let's go actually declare the amount you've got and stick it in the tower. And they do just that. They say there's around £300,000 worth of silver taken from a single ship called the Nuestra Señora de la Concepción. But I mean, in today's money, it's hard to translate accurately, but it's around the billion mark. It's a phenomenal amount of money. But that's where the speculation comes from, because all of this, there would have been lots of flirting, and she obviously eventually encourages a French diplomat to knight him, to make him Sir Francis Drake. So they were very close for quite a long time, but he does eventually fall out of favor with her. He loses her favorite ship called the Revenge and goes back to being a privateer, and eventually succumbs to dysentery. So it's almost, it appears that towards the end of his career, he's trying to regain his popularity and his favor with the Queen.
Well, let me just do a quick follow-up question, because I always heard that when he died off the coast of Panama, Portobello, I guess, that he was in full armor. They put him in a sealed coffin and they buried him at sea. And to this day, people are still searching for that coffin. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, well, we still have that. The info is frustrating because, you know, the A, it's not accurate, and B, we're led to believe loads of it is lost in a fire in Whitehall Palace, which is one of the royal residents. But there's nothing on paper that shows that site ever being discovered. And we're going off a book that Drake's nephew puts together, who's also called Francis Drake, not Sir Francis Drake, but called Francis Drake. So, you know, the information is obviously biased. It's obviously from a Englishman and relations perspective, but there's nothing on paper to say where if he's been discovered since. So, I mean, hey, it could still be out there. It's the plot point of the Uncharted video games, would you believe? So it's still out there.
Well, you know, one of the things I really enjoyed was going to the different levels of the ship and having you describe, you know, actually how the diplomats went to battle against another ship, and you know the different action and the different hierarchies from the bottom to the top. That's really a great place to visit because people can just buy tickets and come in and take the tour. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a great asset, the vessel itself. I mean, and there is part of me that's sad that she will never be able to sail around again. But it's you know, as you saw, it's wild, right? I mean, this was literally a time where they would build these ships low and lean for maneuverability, knowing full well what they're going to go off and do, which is, you know, explore secondary, I guess, but first and foremost is engage with other ships and take what they have, anything of wealth. But they would just pack them in, and the gun deck on our vessel is so low. I mean, you have to hunch over just to get up and down. But you know, it was a very strict system. You know, it's quite socialistic. You've got your captain, you've got your officers, which are the people who have sort of had an education and training, and then everyone else is a volunteer, and no one sort of press ganged or tricked. The only web spun on this particular voyage was that you're going to go on a 3-month voyage, which ended up being 3 years. But the allure of wealth, I guess, and having a roof over your head and a meal in your belly was just that factor that you sort of thought about and said, well, I'll just go with you because, hey, if I make it back, I'm going to get some money. In either case, I've now got a roof over my head and I've got bed and board. So it's just really, really hard for us to sort of conceive. We're very, very blessed, but it was absolutely wild.
Just have time for one more question. And by the way, Sir Francis Drake High School out here in the Bay Area recently changed its name to Archie Williams, who was a Tuskegee Airman and a gold medalist. Not a, you know, not a bad person. We've done a lot of name changes out here in California. But my question is, I remember going to the National Portrait Gallery there in Trafalgar Square, and I remember seeing the portrait of Drake, and he had his hand on a globe, and he was the Magellan, or as you guys would say, the Magellan. He was the first Englishman to circumnavigate, right?
Yeah, 100%. And he is using Magellan's work because we have accounts of the books he takes, the charts, the maps, and Magellan sort of lays down the foundation. I think Magellan passes away in the Philippines, but around 12 of his crew managed to make it back. But he takes the Magellan Strait, you know, which is they lose a ship there. So out of the five that leave, we know they pull two smaller ones apart when they get to the Argentinian coast because there's a bit of a mutiny, a bit of a falling out. But when they finally take the Magellan Strait, they lose a vessel, all hands lost. And the third gets turned around and thinks it's far better to go back to England rather than it is to try and make their way through this dangerous strait. So the captain of that ship, a person called Captain Winter, is actually clapped in irons and taken to the tower for abandoning the mission. But he is quite the character. We touch on all the things over here, but it's an incredible story, to say the least.
Bankside upon the Thames, go there, the Golden Hind, goldenhind.co.uk, and of course the silent E there. Golden Hind, we've been speaking with Gary Lockley. Gary, great stuff, man. I could talk to you all day about this stuff.
No worries. Appreciate your time. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much, and thanks to Ben Glazer for the introduction.
Yes, and Karen, nicely done. Good guess.
Yeah, well, you know, we always keep it interesting. It's nice that you love history as much as I do.
Good stuff. We'll take a quick break, and we will come on back on Sports Byline USA.